spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف. I hope Allah gives me tawfiq to be able to do justice with this important issue, the issue of characteristics of community of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. And inshallah, with your du'as and with your inshallah contribution by comments and questions, whatever comes to your mind, inshallah we can as a community get involved and engaged with this important topic. Inshallah, we will try to address every night one important aspect of community. And tonight I'm going to prepare the ground, inshallah, for the coming lectures. As we know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran that He has sent for mankind many, many prophets. Why? لِيَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ, so that people establish justice, social justice, equity. لِيَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ, not لِيُقِيمُوا الْقِسْطِ. They didn't come to establish social justice. They came to teach people and help people so that people get ready for establishing social justice. Throughout the history, humanity never achieved this social justice, but at least because of the hard work of the prophets and messengers, there were few people in each generation who had clear idea of what is supposed to be done. But in the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, this reached the point that there was worry that people would be totally confused. People were not able to understand what is Islam and what is un-Islamic. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam, by giving his life, by giving everything valuable that he had, he tried to awaken people. Inshallah, we'll talk about it later. So, the general plan of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we want to explain tonight is to help people with the messengers in the first place, and then the prophets and guides in the second place, and ulama in the third place, to understand what is justice and how justice has to be achieved. This is very important for us, especially in the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. You hardly find any school of thought in which so much emphasis has been put on justice. Justice for us is present in every corner of our fiqh, of our akhlaq, even in our aqidah. Justice is one of our principles. We have five principles of aqidah. One of them is justice. Not only divine justice. Of course, we believe in divine justice, but this divine justice has to be echoed and reflected in human justice. In fiqh, we have emphasis on justice in many, many areas. Imam of Jama'ah must be just. Imam al-Jum'ah must be just. Witnesses must be just. Narrators of hadith must be just. Judge must be just. Marja must be just. Every big social responsibility needs justice as a requirement.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers, open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here, who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
So, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala planned for humanity two things that should work together, hand in hand. One is individual struggle for purifying ourselves, getting rid of our ego, and dedicating our heart to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And second, to work together to get rid of taghut and establishing justice on the earth, so that the people who are creatures of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala can peacefully work together and collectively worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and have opportunities for progress in this world and also salvation in the hereafter. So this is the plan of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In this plan, Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam had a historical role. I am giving you some clues. I don't have time into going to details. I'm sure you are, mashallah, very educated and very intelligent, and you understand everything, you know, perfectly. If you read the lives of the messengers in the Quran, you find that the Prophet Ibrahim, Nabiyyina wa Ali alayhi salam, had a very important role. He is one of the very special people. One of the five most outstanding messengers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The father of Tawheed. The one that today Jews, Christians, Muslims all belong. So if today there is a group of people which are actually more than half population of the world who believe in God in a monotheistic way, this is all partly because of Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam. I'm saying partly because, of course, many other prophets contributed, but we are all in debt to Prophet Ibrahim ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam. This man who was so close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala chose him as Khalil. وَاتَّخَذَ اللَّهُ إِبْرَاهِيمَ خَلِيلًا. This is not very, you know, ordinary position. It's very high position.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe is hard and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enable us to be friends with the pious and righteous people in this world and the hereafter. May Allah let us be always on the right path with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad. May Allah enable us and our children, generation by generation, to be always at the service of Imam Mahdi ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. And may Allah make us able to understand what our Imam expects from us to do in this time and in this age. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.
Amid the confusion, the chaos and the pain, a man emerged and Muhammad was his name. And walking with nothing but Allah as his aid, and the mark of a prophet between his shoulder blades. In a cave in Mount Hira the revelation came. Read, O Muhammad, read in Allah's name. May the blessings of Allah be on al-Mustafa. None besides him could have been al-Mujtaba. Muhammad, peace be upon his soul. The greatest of prophets, Islam was his only goal. بلغ العلا بكماله كشف التجا بجماله حسن الجميع خصاله صلوا عليه وآله محمد peace be upon his soul. The greatest of prophets, Islam was his only goal.
Round the World with Reporters.
A human tide, rarely seen, flooded in the streets of Paris and all over France in a freedom march against a new security law. The massive protest is held against President Macron's government that is pushing a new bill that restricts the ability to film police. Human rights associations and media are unanimous. This law would allow police brutality to go undiscovered and unpunished.
There's a huge popular opposition against this law. Even the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations and other international bodies criticize it. A social majority in this country refuses the implementation of this law. Since a long time, we alert the government on police brutality and violence against women. Violence against women during the lockdown is exploding, and the government remains inactive and guilty.
Two major events this week plead in favor of the protesters and of the importance of video footage to denounce police violence. First, French police dismantled a migrant camp in central Paris. The French government ordered an internal police investigation after police officers were filmed tossing migrants out of tents and intentionally tripping one while evacuating a protest camp.
It is important to film this kind of situations because it's part of freedom of expression. Filming with our phones is almost the only way of publishing this kind of violence against migrants, people from the suburb, against everybody.
And then a second video showed the violent arrest of a black music producer in Paris. Three police officers repeatedly punched and hit him during 20 minutes. The man told that the officers made racist insults.
Thanks to the images showing the beating by a kind of private militia attacking a music producer, the truth has come out. Without this video footage from a surveillance camera, the man would be in prison accused for using violence against the police. That shows the importance of having a counter power in this country.
Under a huge pressure, Interior Minister Darmanin announced disciplinary proceedings as soon as possible, but that might be too little, too late. In the meantime, the protest is going on. A large majority in the French parliament voted in favor of the security law, but the Senate still has to approve it. Right-wing senators, a majority in the Senate, declared they will rewrite the law because it is unconstitutional. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
tens of thousands of Sudanese have bid farewell to their last democratically elected prime minister, who died of COVID-19-related complications at 84. According to the National Umma Party, which he led until his death, Sadiq al-Mahdi died in hospital in the United Arab Emirates, where he was receiving treatment after becoming infected with the novel coronavirus in October.
I think the loss of the Sadiq al-Mahdi, the Umma Party leader and the Sudanese, the most intellectual person in the Sudanese political process, is so great loss. It will be reflecting on all and hold the political process.
Imam Sadiq is the greatest one in the Sudan, and this era need him. Why? Because according to the government,
Al-Mahdi served as a prime minister in the mid-60s and again in the mid-80s before he was overthrown in a coup of 1989, which led to rise power of President Omar al-Bashir. After being forced out of office, Al-Mahdi remained a leading politician in Sudan. In a statement, Sudan Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok described him as one of the most important figures of South politics, literature and wisdom in the country. Meanwhile, senior National Umma Party said that the party will continue to follow the anti-Israel policies taken by the late Sadiq al-Mahdi.
We have our own doctrine based on the Islamic ethics. We are against the normalization. If the needs arise, not al-Burhan, neither Hamdok will decide on behalf of the Sudanese people. The elected, the coming elected parliament will decide on the behalf of the Sudanese nation.
I think this constitution will go in the same road of the leader Sadiq al-Mahdi in the normalization, against the normalization or any establishment of the relationship between the Sudan and Israel.
Al-Mahdi was a well-known Sudanese political figure who played an important role in public affairs and wrote several books addressing the situation in Sudan.
For more than 60 decades, Sadiq al-Mahdi was icon of democracy, Islamic thought, and a strong opponent of imperialism in Sudan and abroad. Mohamed Fazari, from Khartoum, Sudan, city of Omdurman.
At 2:30 p.m. local time on Friday, in a countryside area east of Tehran, a truck loaded with explosives blew up to intercept the car carrying top Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Eyewitnesses say five or six gunmen then rushed from a nearby vehicle and opened fire on his car. Fakhrizadeh was seriously injured and taken to hospital, but medics were unable to save his life. The incident immediately sent its shockwaves across Iran and beyond, with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif calling the attack an act of terror and linking it to Israel. Inside Iran, the assassination comes as a shock. Less than 24 hours after the incident, people from all walks of life gathered outside the Iranian parliament to condemn the assassination, which they view as grave as the U.S.'s assassination of top IRGC commander Qasem Soleimani in January.
What happened to our nuclear scientist was carried out by the same terrorists who killed Qasem Soleimani. Like Mr. Soleimani, Fakhrizadeh offered many services to our nation.
If we back down on this terrorist act, the U.S. and Israel will become more insolent towards us. We have gathered here to urge the government and lawmakers to take a tough stance towards the perpetrators to avoid further such incidents.
Fakhrizadeh served as the head of the Research and Innovation Organization of the Defense Ministry. Iranian officials say he had a long history in defense innovations and had made key efforts to promote Iran's nuclear energy program.
Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
This had made him the number one target of Israel's intelligence services, which have a track record of targeted killings of Iranian nuclear scientists nearly a decade ago.
Israel is not willing to see Iran's advancement in science and technology. It killed four other Iranian nuclear scientists, and now it assassinated Mr. Fakhrizadeh. But Israel should know that it cannot stop Iran's peaceful nuclear program, because those martyrs have trained numerous young scientists who will take the lead in this field.
Observers say the assassination of the Iranian scientist comes as part of Israel's attempts to disrupt Iran's nuclear energy program, which Tel Aviv accuses of having military dimensions. Iran has time and again dismissed such allegations and signed the 2015 nuclear deal with the world powers as a sign of goodwill.
Fakhrizadeh now becomes the fifth Iranian nuclear scientist who was eliminated in a terror attack. while all indications attest to an Israeli involvement. Iranians here demand that the government take a harsh revenge. This, they say, would reduce the chances of more Iranian scientists becoming an easy target for terrorists. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
After the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, all electoral processes in the region were suspended and Kashmir came under the direct control of New Delhi. Also, the role of major pro-India political parties in Kashmir was belittled after New Delhi detained all pro-India politicians. The absence of people's political participation created a void in Kashmir's political sphere and raised many questions on New Delhi's claims of normalcy in the region. And to break the ice, amid tough security measures, New Delhi is holding local elections in 8 phases, ending on December 19th. A large number of voters has braved cold weather to vote, and each of them has their own reasons.
Our educated youth are doing menial jobs. We have problems like improper roads and lack of electricity. Who will take up our issues to higher-ups? That's why we voted for our trusted candidate.
Election boycott calls in past by the pro-independence camp of Kashmir were highly supported by the people of Kashmir. But this time they say they want to fight for equality and justice via elections.
We are seeking respect since we are treated as second-class citizens. The country's progress hardly reaches us. By casting our vote, we tell the champions of democracy to do justice. Earlier, our election boycott was an excuse for them. Now we will give them no excuse. We want equal rights and treatment.
While voters have their own reasons to cast ballots, candidates have their aims too.
I can't promise my people jobs and land rights because with Article 370 everything is gone. My goal is to safeguard my people against the plots of people with anti-Muslim agendas. I believe in peace and tranquility and I want to work for secularism in my bloc.
The main contesting parties in this local election are Bharatiya Janata Party, Indian National Congress, and alliance of local political parties.
Amid heightened security, the elections in Indian-administered Kashmir are being portrayed by many as a step towards normalcy and peace in the region. However, experts say such electoral processes have hardly helped Kashmir in the past, adding long-lasting peace is only possible when the issue gets permanently resolved between India and Pakistan. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Despite the apparent demise of the Trump era, it is clear that the far-right movement in the West is still alive and well. White supremacy, racism and xenophobia are problems in every EU country.
But this is the end! It's the end! Enough's enough!
Coordinated by the European Commission Brussels, religious leaders from all of the main faiths have just taken part in a video conference.
Reports of anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim attacks are now almost part of everyday life in our beloved Europe.
The leaders say the answer is to show more unity and greater mutual respect.
I want to say that if somebody hurts a Muslim sister, a Jewish brother, they are hurting me.
The European Union's much-criticized asylum policy also came under the spotlight during the event.
Europe loses its soul if we continue to watch people drowning in the Mediterranean. That is why we support civil rescue missions.
Religious leaders insist the European Union must do more to ensure refugees play a positive and productive role in society. Experts agree.
There were mistakes in integration of the migrants and there were mistakes in education, or lack of education or lack of access to the educational system.
In the past, Saudi Arabia has been criticised for sponsoring terrorism in the EU. The European Commission says it is easier to brainwash vulnerable young men when they do not feel part of a community.
This sense of belonging would be the best shield against radicalisation, terrorism and hatred.
Work is continuing to try and curtail terrorist recruitment online in the EU. However, sociologists believe that is not the root cause of the security issue.
They say the source of the problem is not the internet, but the current climate within society. The focus should be on changing that, they argue. Jerome Hughes, Brussels. ¶¶
after a long hunger strike going beyond 100 days to protest against his detention. Without charge or trial, Palestinian prisoner Maher al-Akhras has been finally freed. The Israeli authorities released al-Akhras from the Israeli hospital of Qablan, where he was held for subsequent worsening of his health condition. He arrived at al-Najah hospital in the West Bank city of Nablus following his release by Israeli authorities. After final medical examinations, he was moved to his hometown, Silat al-Dahr, north of the occupied West Bank. In a press statement, al-Akhras thanked the Palestinian people for the solidarity actions and insisted that gaining rights and liberty are only achieved through fighting.
Praise be to God that I am now among my family and my people in Nablus, and that, God willing, we will get rid of the occupation with the mighty wills of our people and live from victory to victory until we reach a greater victory and liberate Palestine.
Israel arrested al-Akhras in July over accusations of being a prominent member of the Jihad resistance group, which he denied. He immediately started his hunger strike, demanding that he should either be prosecuted for clear charges or be released. Israel at first refused to deal with his demands, but when he was at the verge of death, the Israeli High Court ruled that if al-Akhras ended his hunger strike, his administrative detention would not be renewed upon its expiration on 6th of November. Prominent figures who rushed to welcome al-Akhras praised his encouragement in what they described as defeating the occupation's authorities. Administrative detention involves no indictment, no revelation of confidential evidence, and no trial or judgment of the accusations against the prisoner. Hundreds of Palestinian prisoners are languishing in Israel's jails without charge or trial under the illegal so-called administrative detention. The inmates say their hunger strike is a bet to have their voice heard and to force the Israeli regime to end this illegal policy. Reports say more than 7,000 Palestinians are held in Israeli jails. Maher al-Akhras has achieved victory through his hunger strike, and he's free today. Experts say his battle definitely gives other Palestinian prisoners under administrative detention a glimmer of hope, enabling them to go on with their actions and their fight for justice that aim to get back their rights in Israeli jails. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The UN Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, said in a report that Israel's prolonged blockade of the Gaza Strip and the regime's military operations against the Palestinian enclave had inflicted some $17 billion U.S. dollars in losses between 2007 and 2018. Richard Kuzel-Wright, the director of UNCTAD's Globalization and Development Strategies, said that it was extremely difficult to see anything but redevelopment being the fate of Gaza society. The Israeli regime has placed the Gaza Strip under a tight blockade since 2007 and waged three wars on it since 2008. The blockade and military operations had driven the poverty rate in Gaza to increase almost fourfold compared with normal conditions.
The losses that were highlighted in the UNCTAD report show the extent of damage caused by the Israeli blockade and wars against the Gaza Strip, especially the three major wars since 2008. Israel has systematically destroyed civilian infrastructure and economic sectors, in addition to the loss of innocent lives.
According to the UNCTAD report, Gaza has witnessed one of the worst economic performances globally. In addition to killing and maiming thousands of Gazans during the wars, Israeli forces also bombed civilian infrastructure, as well as thousands of factories and businesses.
The Palestinian economy in Gaza is collapsing because of the Israeli wars and blockade. Israel waged three major wars in less than 10 years and destroyed all aspects of our economy in Gaza.
As day laborers, we sustained heavy losses because of the wars. Factories were destroyed during the wars, and thousands of people lost their sources of income.
UNCTAD says its estimates are partial because they cover only the economic cost of the Israeli occupation from the prolonged closure and recurrent military operations in Gaza from 2007 to 2018. Experts say the Israeli regime must be held accountable for its illegal policies against the Palestinian people.
Israeli military aggressions and the blockade amount to war crimes, and the international community must bring an end to Israel's impunity. The Palestinian Authority and human rights organizations must also include the economic file in their complaints at the International Criminal Court because Israel perpetrated war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Observers say that for Gaza's economy to slightly recover, the blockade must be fully lifted. According to UN figures, the Israeli regime is responsible for the near collapse of Gaza's regional economy and its isolation from the Palestinian economy and the rest of the world. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Sudan's former premier Sadr al-Mahdi dies from the novel coronavirus at the age of 84. Al-Mahdi was Sudan's last democratically elected prime minister, who was transferred to the United Arab Emirates for treatment but succumbed to the illness nonetheless. The government declared 3 days of national mourning for his passing. Al-Mahdi was born in 1935 in the city of Omdurman and grew up during the last 2 decades of British imperial rule on Sudan. He became the country's prime minister in 1966, but his term did not last long as he was ousted in 1967 by a coalition of defectors. Later in 1986, Al-Mahdi was elected again as premier, but was toppled once more in 1989 by former ruler Omar al-Bashir in a military coup. The post of prime minister of Sudan was then abolished. Since his ouster, al-Mahdi continued to lead the Ummah Party, one of the largest opposition movements during Bashir's era, and spent a period in exile, but eventually returned to Sudan in the year 2000. He threw his weight behind the mass protest movement that eventually prompted the military to overthrow the president last year. After Bashir's ouster, al-Mahdi pushed for a transfer to civilian rule, warning of the risks of a counter-coup and calling for the powerful paramilitary rapid support forces to be integrated into the army. Al-Mahdi was also against the normalization of ties with Israel and supported the axis of resistance against the regime. In October, he slammed US President Donald Trump's announcement that Sudan would start normalizing ties with Israel. Al-Mahdi stressed that Trump's statement contradicts the Sudanese national law and contributes to the elimination of the peace process in the Middle East. He accused Trump of being racist against Muslims and described Israel as an apartheid regime. However, Sudan became the third Arab country to normalize ties with Israel after the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain in August. Al-Mahdi warned that normalizing ties with Tel Aviv will prepare the ground for the ignition of a new war.
The coronavirus crisis has highlighted just how vulnerable the EU is when it comes to even the most basic healthcare requirements, such as having enough face masks. The bloc has also had to import ventilators and medication, mostly from China. The European Commission has just unveiled a pharmaceutical strategy aimed at making the EU less dependent.
We do not want to see, never again, the problems that we faced during the first weeks of the pandemic. Never again.
The plan is to ensure essential items are manufactured within the EU. The European Commission is also concerned that EU nations will not be ready to distribute vaccines when they become available in the coming weeks. Just half of the bloc's 27 nations have published plans. Countries are being told to redouble their efforts.
This means that member states need to have the necessary infrastructure and the logistics, so when there is a safe and effective vaccine, they can roll it out and deploy it as quickly as possible.
Businesses are buckling under the pressure of lockdowns in many EU countries. The run-up to the December and January holiday period is normally their most profitable time. EU leaders continue to squabble over much-needed financial support packages for employers.
We've seen a major shock to the whole of the euro area, major trouble in Spain, in Italy, in other countries. I think the response was too weak.
Officials warn that if COVID-19 restrictions are relaxed too soon, hospitals will be overwhelmed during early 2021. It appears to be an impossible health-economy balancing act for governments. There is concern we are becoming complacent because we know vaccines are coming. Equally, authorities are worried too few of us will take advantage of the scientific breakthrough. The European Centre for Disease Control says each year hundreds of thousands of healthcare workers in the EU refuse to take the seasonal flu vaccine. It begs the question how many of them, and how many people in general, will agree to be injected with a COVID-19 vaccine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight. A recount in Wisconsin's largest county demanded by President Donald Trump's election campaign ended on Friday, 27th of November, with the president-elect Joe Biden gaining votes. After a recount in Milwaukee County, Joe Biden made a net gain of 132 votes out of nearly 460,000 cast. Overall, the Democrat gained 257 votes to Donald Trump's 125. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at The Guardian, with contributions from Reuters and Associated Press news agencies. The piece is titled, Joe Biden Gains Votes in Wisconsin County After Trump-Ordered Recount. Stay with us for more. A recount in Wisconsin's largest county demanded by President Donald Trump's election campaign ended on Friday, 27th of November, with the president-elect Joe Biden gaining votes. After a recount in Milwaukee County, Joe Biden made a net gain of 132 votes out of nearly 460,000 cast. Overall, the Democrat gained 257 votes to Donald Trump's 125. Trump's campaign had demanded recounts in two of Wisconsin's most populous and Democratic-leaning counties. after he lost Wisconsin to Joe Biden by more than 20,000 votes. The two recounts will cost the Trump campaign $3 million. Dane County is expected to finish its recount on Sunday. Overall, Biden won November's U.S. presidential election with 306 electoral college votes to Donald Trump's 232. Biden also leads by more than 6 million in the popular vote tally. After the recount ended, the Milwaukee County Clerk, George Christensen, said, "The recount demonstrates that what we already know, that elections in Milwaukee County are fair, transparent, accurate, and secure." The Trump campaign is still expected to mount a legal challenge to the overall result in Wisconsin, but time is running out. The state is due to certify its presidential result next Tuesday. On Friday, Trump's legal team suffered yet another defeat when a federal appeals court in Philadelphia rejected the campaign's latest effort to challenge the state's election results. Trump's lawyers said they would take the case to the Supreme Court despite the Philadelphia judge's assessment that the campaign's claims have no merit. Judge Stefanos Bibas wrote for the three-judge panel, "Free, fair elections are the lifeblood of our democracy. Charges of unfairness are serious, but calling an election unfair does not make it so. Charges require specific allegations and then proof. We have neither here." President Trump continued to maintain without evidence that there was election fraud in the state, tweeting early on Saturday, "The 1,126,940 votes were created out of thin air. I won Pennsylvania by a lot, perhaps more than anyone will ever know." Meanwhile, Donald Trump's baseless claims of electoral fraud in Georgia are increasingly worrying his own party. Republicans are concerned that the chaos caused by Trump's stance and his false comments on the conduct of the election in the key swing state, which Joe Biden won, could hinder his party's efforts to retain control of the Senate. A runoff for Georgia's two Senate seats is scheduled for early January, and if the Democrats clinch both seats, it will give them control of the upper house as well as the House of Representatives. When asked about his previous baseless claims of fraud in Georgia during a Thanksgiving Day press conference, Donald Trump said he was very worried about them, saying, "You have a fraudulent system." He then called the state's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who has defended the state's election process, an enemy of the people. Such attacks have Republicans worried as they seek to motivate Georgia voters to come to the polls in early January, volunteer for their state Senate campaigns, and, perhaps more important than all, dig deep into their pockets to pay for the unexpected runoff races. In particular, Donald Trump's comments have spurred conspiracy theories that the state's electoral system is rigged and prompted some of his supporters to make calls for a boycott of the coming vote, something that local Georgia Republicans desperately do not want. His demonization of Georgia's entire electoral system is hurting his party's chances at keeping the Senate, warned an article published by the website Politico. Even President Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., has jumped into the fray in Georgia, tweeting, "I'm seeing a lot of talk from people that are supposed to be on our side telling GOP voters not to go out and vote. That is nonsense. Ignore those people." The president, has also pledged to visit Georgia to hold rallies in support of the two Republican candidates, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. The first of those events is expected to be on Saturday, 5th of December, and could be a double-edged sword. Donald Trump is still a powerful force with loyal following, whose endorsement is a key mobilization tool for the race. On the other hand, in his freewheeling rallies, Donald Trump may spout conspiracy theories that undermine their campaigns. Certainly, Trump's mood has become increasingly erratic, even as he made the clearest signs yet that he will eventually leave the White House, which he convincingly lost to Joe Biden in both the popular vote and the vital electoral college that actually picks the next president. On Thanksgiving Day, Trump said he would leave the White House when the Electoral College voted for Joe Biden. He has so far defied tradition by refusing to concede defeat and launching legal attempts to challenge the outcome of election in battleground states including Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. So far, those legal efforts have all failed. On Thursday, 26th of November, Trump had declined to say whether he would attend Joe Biden's inauguration, which is due to take place on 20th of January, and called one reporter a lightweight, telling him, "Don't talk to me like that." Trump continued his rant on Friday, 27th of November, producing a long string of retweets and tweets making untrue claims about election and his opponent. Trump tweeted, "Biden can only enter the White House as president if he can prove that his ridiculous 80 million votes were not fraudulently or illegally obtained."
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, and I'm Atad, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints, produced by Brother Mahmoud, is an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, two experts from the Islamic House of Qom. To continue the discussion, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
And Brother Ali Alavian, assalamu alaikum, brother, welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thanks for having me here.
That's right. So, you know, one of the important cases that the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, recently, one of his speeches tackled was the results of the 2020 United States presidential election and the role that it might have or have not in the destiny of the other countries, including the country that is led by him, Islamic Republic of Iran. We know that the Democratic Party, led by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, won the election. And there have been, of course, some claims about the fraud in election by President Trump, the now President of the United States of America. But and everywhere in the media, when you're looking, you know, they were after the results of this election, that what will happen. Of course, you know, there are still days for Joe Biden to get into the office and start his official work over there. The important case is that different leaders all across the world have sent congratulations to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, but the supreme leaders of Iran approach to this election and the result was somehow different from the other leaders. In a title, he said that the Islamic Republic's well-calculated an unwavering policy in the first of U.S. will not be changed and has not been changed during these 40 years after the Islamic revolution of Iran. Okay, Brother Ali, let's get to you and have more elaboration. You know, Trump and a variety of his surrogates and supporters made a series of claims that the election was fraudulent. And this is at the same time he himself was running the presidential election, because we know that the now president of the U.S. and every president in a country, we can say, has to run the presidential election for a period. And he is, in fact, the runner, the main runner, and the main controller of what? The presidential election, I mean the process itself. So the case is that in no time in the history, this has been made in the U.S. history. I mean that the election that is being done is fraudulent and the polling accuracies are questioned. So this is very much different from the processes before, you know, I mean, in the U.S. history. Although, as Rahbar said, the president, we can say, that was selected and elected in the U.S., they are following the scenarios that are written behind the scene for them. But the main question is that, why hope in the U.S.? I mean, and why hope in Joe Biden administration, in the media? Because you really can find it that when Trump is toppled down, some people are really happy. And some people, even in the Muslim lands, are happy that Biden have been elected. And they have this hope that he might do something for them. Talk a little bit about the whiness of this hope among the people, brother.
Yeah. We should be a little bit realistic and see and actually analyze the situation in the way that actually we see the context of this situation. Having hope, as you said rightly, it can be seen in not only in Muslim countries, even in some non-Muslim countries, from the arrival of Joe Biden, though, as you said, the issue of this fraudulent and the fraud that they are claiming is strongly emphasized by themselves. And I think it has a reality. Even I have seen a poll recently done. Almost 73% of Americans themselves believe that there was a fraud, and also the number of the ballots overrode the number of the people eligible to vote.
That's right.
So it means that
this is a problem with the Electoral College in the U.S. Yeah, I mean, so the system of voting.
Definitely, yeah. There was a fraud, and whatever Trump is saying is not nonsense, actually, in this regard only. Yeah. Why people actually like him to topple, like Trump to topple? For Muslim countries, I think it has some reason, because he was one of the most vicious and wicked presidents in the history of America, at least with his policies against Muslim countries, with his support of Israel, with his support of change of the embassy of America from Tel Aviv to
Jerusalem.
That's right. Again, with his visa ban issue, that he actually stopped
the immigrants and the Muslims
of migrants from, for example, some seven countries, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to America.
Yes.
And for ourselves, he himself actually targeting the beloved General Soleimani, that actually brought a sort of deep hatred from Iranian towards him.
Mm-hmm.
So for ourselves, for the people inside Iran, I think it is quite understandable.
Yeah, it's been 1 year now. It's anniversary
and
is near.
Also, the hardest sanctions and embargoes that he has put during this last four years against Iranians, and with this knowledge and with the agreement that has been done with the previous governments of America, but since he came and he put that much Russia and Iranians. So it can be understood why people are happy, but we are also not happy from the other person who is coming. Mm-hmm. We have seen that this new person, Joe Biden, has written an article recently, I think, if in one of the media, in one of the magazines.
CNN.
In CNN? Yeah. It was an article.
Written article.
On the website.
Yeah.
On website, okay.
In one of the media.
Okay.
Even this person, Joe Biden, recently wrote an article somewhere, and he clearly actually mentioned that he is interested to get back to JCPOA, but with negotiations for some more privileges to be taken from Iran. While he was the person who his government and his administration was the administration that wrote to sign this contract. Now then he's again back. Mm-hmm. He is talking about another series of negotiation which cannot be accepted at all. While you have already agreed on something, why do you want to start negotiation again on it? What kind of negotiation are you talking about? Then again, when we see his reactions towards the change of the embassy of America, the U.S., from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv again, he's silent and he agrees with what Trump did. In fact, we can say that Trump was a maskless, character and personality of politicians in the U.S., and he did whatever the others wished. So...
of course, he claimed himself that I'm not a politician, you know.
Who?
Trump. Mm-hmm. Trump, when he was in the debate with Joe Biden, he said that, you know, Joe, why I want to be the president? Because I ran for people like you and Barack Obama and the politicians like you, okay?
Yeah.
I ran for you. I mean, you were insufficient. You were not efficient enough.
True.
So I did it because you lacked, you know.
Anyhow, whether they are saying this motives and slogans rightly or wrongly, but they are actually going to be elected as the politicians of this country.
Okay.
So with policies and tough policies of Trump, lots of Muslim countries, including Iran, were suffered. And that's why many people are happy from him going and even, inshallah, going to the hell.
Said Mohsen Naqvi. Rahman has also mentioned this election process. We know that for so many years there are some problems with this system of, electoral college in the U.S. And recently, for the first time, we could see in the demonstrations that count every vote, okay? This is what we do for 40 years in Iran, you know? Mm. We count every vote, and based on the votes and the number of the votes that people are given, they are selected as the parliament member or the president or in the other elections, okay? But the case is that it seems that this democracy, the U.S. is claiming, is not democracy. I mean, the authority of the people over there and not the vote of the people. As Rahbar said, it is a kind of political decline. Said, explain a little bit about this place.
Well, as we said before, obviously in America there is a system. There are people who are running the whole system, whole America. And these parties, they are just a front face who will basically obey their orders. Therefore, yes, in America there is no democracy. Because if there was a democracy, the situation wasn't like this. People, they do go and they vote in the ballots, but those votes have no value because in America we have seen that they pre-decide who will obviously come and who will not. And it depends on the system. The Zionist regime, whoever they want,